So, this is the last in our series on the habits of effective Vaishnavas. And I'd like to start again by emphasizing that for 30 years in our society, we have attempted to practice the principles of Krishna consciousness. And we've had many ups and downs, and I'm sure many devotees have made spiritual advancement. And our path is very clear. We just have to follow the footsteps chalked out by Lord Krishna's pure devotee. Dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gata sapantaha. But as I said in the beginning, while living together, whatever we can use from the material world to help us be better human beings and even be better Vaishnavas, we should not hesitate in using that, understanding that it is only that. We don't need a substitute for Krishna consciousness. We don't need the 12-step process or the 7 habits or this or that. We need the mercy of Lord Krishna's pure devotee. But even Srila Prabhupada could see that we were struggling. And Rupa Goswami did encourage us to use everything in Krishna's service. Prabhupada tried to establish Vanashram Dharma in his latter days because he saw that we were struggling. Let's face it, I don't know if you're aware of it, but in the material world, the non-devotees have, at least in America, about a 60% divorce rate. Either divorce or separation or annulment. They have a lot of trouble with relationships, living together. I don't know about the present rate, but there are some people who have said that in ISKCON we're at about 70%. In other words, we're not doing that much better, or even we're doing worse than non-devotees in relationship building. A lot of it has to do with our immaturity, our superficial understanding of Varnashram Dharma, our superficial understanding of the roles of souls in male bodies and the roles of souls in female bodies. A lot of it has to do with our being from bad backgrounds. Many of us are coming to Krishna consciousness as a kind of hope for mercy, having been whatever, some people were hippies, drug addicts, alcoholics, or whatever. Mahaprabhu is known as Patita Pavana. Mahaprabhu came to pick up the most fallen souls. Anybody here in that category? Most fallen souls? Okay. That's good, because you're now eligible for Nityananda's mercy. So, that's good. But these principles, or any principles that you find, basically true north principles, they don't depend upon voting. It's not a concoction. It's quite in line with, lined up, alignment. It's in line with our Krishna conscious principles. Any principle that will help us to become better in our dealing with other Vaishnavas, in our relationships, and in our effectiveness, because management means dealing with people, really. You may have the biggest temple in the world. You may have the most beautiful deities in the world. You may have a big bank account. You may have 15 Sankirtan bands. You may have books, every book in your language published, huge storehouse. You may have so many facilities. But if you can't get along with the Vaishnavas, you won't have anyone to work with because people will leave that place. One of the most magnificent projects in the Western world has been Srila Prabhupada's Palace of Gold in New Vrindavan. Have any of you been there to New Vrindavan? No? Have you seen pictures of it?
Yes.
The palace? Yes. Have you seen the video of it?
Yes.
No?
Yes. Yes.
This is a spectacular place. It's incredible that it was built. Even the non-devotees are amazed. It's one of the top tourist spots in West Virginia, number one or number two in the whole state. People are amazed by it. When asked, the leader of that community, when asked what was the most difficult thing he had to do in building that project, what do you think his answer was?
Get people together.
Working with the devotees. That was the hardest thing. Not the building of the project. That was easy. So, it's something that we have to think about realistically in terms of our management. This is basically a management seminar. A time management seminar. But what it's translated as is life leadership. So today, yesterday and the day before, we discussed the habits 1, 2, and 3, or the private victory. So as I said, this presentation is just an overview. I'm using material that has been developed by a mundane organization called the Covey Leadership Center. And they've licensed us. We paid for a license to get material to use it in Krishna service, and I'm licensed to teach it in ISKCON, not outside, and only in a 3-day format, that's 18 hours, and that also every participant must have a manual. So we've done seminars like that in ISKCON. In Mayapur this year, we did a seminar for about 35 leaders, all temple presidents from around India and around Asia, and each one of them paid about $100 for the manual and for the course. We've done other seminars. Naveen Krishna is doing one now in Radhadesh and also in Moscow. There's a lot more than what I'm giving you in this short overview. That's me. Okay. The private victory, be proactive. You can call it anything you want, really. We don't have to use their language. Basically, it means taking responsibility for your own life. And I'm telling you, you really have to do that if you want to be successful. You have to face the facts that you come here in the material world alone. Each and every one of us is alone. I'm looking out at all of you, and I'm looking at your faces, looking in your eyes. I don't know what you're thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking. If I pinch myself, ouch! Did any of you feel that? No? because we're basically alone. Sometimes I tell the story of my mother and father, married for 30 years.
Okay?
30 years living very closely together. You would think there was some communication, some understanding, some deep communion. No. Divorce after 30 years. No communication. So close. I feel more communion with Krishna, who I can't see, I can't touch, I can't taste, I can't smell, only in his saguna form of the Archavigraha deity or his photo, but I can't really reach out and embrace him like I want to. But I feel more communion with him than I do with most people in the material world who I see, touch, smell, etc. Something deeper. So we really are alone in this world, and we have to take responsibility. You call it proactivity, you call it taking responsibility, call it whatever you like. But if you want to be successful in your life, in Krishna consciousness, you can't sit around feeling sorry for yourself, or feeling victimized, or feeling lethargic. Krishna's the doer. Therefore, let me just sit around and twiddle my thumbs, pick my nose, whatever foolish thing you want to do. Waste your time. You've got to get up and do something for Krishna, for yourself. So that's be proactive. It's a habit or a principle of your personal vision of life. We talked about a vision and a mission. That's begin with the end in mind. What is the end? What's the end? Old age, disease, and death. You don't need an astrologer. There was a man who was on a tree. He was sitting on the branch of a tree. And he was sawing the branch of the tree. But after climbing up so high, he had lost his sense of positioning. So he wasn't sawing from the outside, he was sawing from the inside. He needed to saw some wood for his house. He got up very high, he got bewildered, he started to saw from the inside of the branch. So a man came along down below, and he saw him doing that. He said, look out, be careful. If you continue sawing like that, you'll fall down and hurt yourself. Like most men, proud, arrogant, the person sawing was not about to listen to anyone. He knew what he was doing. So he continued to saw. Then about 2 minutes later, the branch broke. He came crashing down and Aaron broke his arm and got all bruised up. And he was shocked. And he jumped up and he ran after the man. You must be an astrologer. How did you tell the future like that? Amazing. We don't need an astrologer. Every day you see it in the newspaper. Old age, disease, and death. It's the same thing. Puna punas charvita charvanana. Chewing the chewed in the material world again and again. It's the same flavor, vanilla. Same thing all over again. Deja vu. So, we have to chart our course. We have to make a plan to be whatever it is we want to be for Krishna. Be part of that 3% that will achieve more than the 90% non-devotees or even devotees who don't make a plan. It's a good habit. Learn from it. Why not? These are habits of personal leadership. The third habit is to do it. You've thought about it, you've decided you're going to take action, you've planned it. Now, make sure that you're focused. You keep things in focus. Don't let the best things become a victim of good things. You're doing so many good things, but you neglect that one very best thing, the tyranny of the unimportant. The less important things. We get caught up in busy work, the thick of thin things, and we miss the opportunity to develop our talents, develop our strengths. So, these are principles of personal management. You have to manage your life. So that's the private victory. The victory of self-discipline. People always ask this question. Invariably it was asked of Srila Prabhupada many times. Our sannyasis hear it all the time. How do I control my senses? How do I become stronger? How do I control my mind? What did Arjuna say? Chanchalahi mana Krishna Pramati Bolavad Vridam Chanchala.
Chanchala.
My mind is very restless. Turbulent. Obstinate. Sound familiar? Very strong. He said, Vayoriva Sudhuskaram, it would be easier to control the wind. See, why don't you stop this wind? Is it easy to stop the wind? Well, nigh impossible. Virtually impossible to control the wind. But still, Arjuna said it would be easier to control the wind than my mind. But Krishna says that it is possible by practice. Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha griyate. By right living, and by constant practice. So there is a process, a method, a technique. Chanting Hare Krishna, you get stronger and stronger. And you can also learn to control your senses by developing self-respect, integrity. By developing integrity in the moment of choice. By choosing not to react to the force of lust. Lust hits you, but you're strong, you've trained yourself. I want a higher taste. The yes within for that un gusto superiore. I like Italian. I don't know what it is. I like pizzas, I like spaghetti, and I like Italian. A higher taste. You want that higher taste. So you, when lust strikes you, you say, no, I'm not going to be degraded. I'm not going to be controlled. I'm not going to be manipulated. I'm not going to live somebody else's agenda of what I should be. I want to be Krishna conscious. Therefore, I'm going to control my senses. And if I need help, I'll go and get it. I'll jump up and run. Help! Help! I'm being attacked! Help me! You know, don't go to a policeman and think you're mad. Sit down with a devotee. Sit down with your wife. Discuss your problems. You're there to help each other. Partners. Okay. Here we are. This is the whole process in a nutshell. Okay. Private victory, habits 1, 2, and 3. Be proactive, begin with the end in mind, first things first. Private victory. Get control of your senses and your mind, find out where you're going, chart your course, and move away from dependence. on others. Move away from dependence to becoming independent of all material contamination. But just being totally aloof, that's Mayavada. Go to the Himalayas, forget everybody, you're totally independent. But you're not a Vaishnava, you're not compassionate. Prahlad Maharaj says, Maya Sukaya Varam Udva To Vimudhan. Mishinga Dev, I have no suffering. I have you. I feel ecstatic. It doesn't matter, heaven or hell, I'm peaceful with you. But when I see all the conditioned souls suffering, Manakshastani, Indriyani, Prakritistani, Karshati, they're struggling very hard with material nature. They're suffering, they're getting old, diseased, and dying, and they're crying. They don't know what to do. Pravritim chajna, vritim chajna, na vidura asura. They don't know what's the right path of action. And they're suffering due to ignorance. Again. Lack of knowledge. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. We pray to the spiritual master. I was in darkness. I was in ignorance. You forced me to open my eyes. Thank you. We're in that. Lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, we've been doing the same things, and that attachment to the body is very deeply rooted. We have to cut the knot. You know about Alexander? The great Greek Alexander. There was an oracle of Delphi, or something, or Delhi, or I don't know, southern Greece. And there was a very famous knot there. Many ropes tied together. Big knot. Very hard to untie. Sometimes, you know, we get our shoelaces knotted up. Or for brahmacharis, their sika gets knotted up. You know, have you ever struggled to get it undone? So you take a comb and half your hairs come out, you know. Knotted up so much. Maybe the ladies also, they don't use their whatever shampoo and your hair gets all knotted up. Not bad, actually. It's aesthetic. But anyway. There was this Gordian knot, and it was said that anybody who could untie that would become the leader of the world. So Alexander was a young man, and he wanted very much to become the leader of the world. So he went down to the Oracle of Delphi, he saw the knot, and he looked at it for about 5 minutes, trying to figure out how to untie it. And then he pulled out his sword and went whack! He said, that's how I untie the Gordian knot. So Krishna says also, Siddhyante Sarva Sanshaya Hridaya Grantis. Cut the knot of material attachment. That's the commitment that we have to make in Krishna consciousness. If you want to become a lover of God, then you can't remain a lover of dog.
Right?
G-O-D and D-O-G. The opposite of God is dog. You can't love God and mammon at the same time. Mammon, you know, in the Bible. You can't be attached to the material world. You can't carry your rocks across the river and expect to swim to the other side of devotional service. You'll drown with those rocks. You have to leave them on the other side. Then you can come over where everything is blissful. But you have to cut the knot in the heart. Pungsa striya mituni bhava mitatayor mito hridaya grante mahu Ato griha chetra sutapta vitaya janasya mohoyam hammamiti. This is a hammamiti. I'm this body. and this is mine, and this is mine, and this is mine, and I'm the enjoyer. My house, my children, my family, all of my toys. You know what they say in America? This is their idea of life. They have a t-shirt. Americans love their t-shirts. How many of you have t-shirts? You have t-shirts here in Croatia also? Where'd you get them from? America, right? Baseball caps turned around and t-shirts. That's America's contribution to the world. Cheeseburgers, t-shirts, and baseball caps turned around.
Coca-Cola.
And Coca-Cola. We don't drink Coca-Cola. Huh?
And IBM too.
And IBM too. Well, no, Toshiba's pretty good. So there's a t-shirt that tells you about life. It says, he who has the most toys at the end of life wins. So Americans, they like their toys. But all of these things, they won't save you. Because you'll just have to come back again. Any little attachment will act like an anchor to pull you back in the material world. So you've got to act in this lifetime. You've got to act in such a way that you don't, that you think of Krishna. You have attachment for Krishna. You've got to do something. This is urgent, folks. This is serious business. You only get maybe one chance, because we're committing so much karma in this lifetime that if we don't make this life successful, there are 8,400,000 species out there. If you want to sleep, you can become a bear. If you like eating, you can become an elephant. If you like sex, you can become a pigeon 10 times an hour. Or a sparrow, or a pig, mother, sister, daughter, no discrimination. You can become a pig, but then you might become someone's dinner also. There's a trade-off there. You can become a tiger. You don't have to cook your meat. You just kill it and drink the blood immediately. Digest the meat immediately. So, we have to take this spiritual life seriously and cut that knot of material affection, become independent. That's the private victory. Become independent relationship. I'm choosing to interact with another person. I'm choosing to open up to them. Not by force, not by powerful influence, but by the reality of things and my own choice. I give to a relationship based upon principles of mutual cooperation, and I can also pull myself back if it doesn't work out. I can cooperate and work together with someone in a mature relationship because I am independent and I can choose to be interdependent. It's a powerful principle of living together in this material world. The public victory. We think win-win. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. Synergy or synergize and sharpen the saw. Is the public victory. You can't achieve this public victory until you first have private victory. You can't become interdependent until you first become independent. These are paradigms of interdependence. So this is the hot button, right? That everybody's interested in. Sarvabhavana has been spending many days talking to us about relationships.
So he popped in just at the right time here, on cue. Like Narad Muni or something. Narad always pops in on cue. Remember when Kamsa was just getting ready to forgive Devaki and Vasudev? Narad popped up and said, "Hey man, chill out! You're not playing the game here. We want to get Krishna to come quickly." He didn't tell him that, but he told him, "Vasudev and Devaki, they can do anything. You don't know. You don't know which child's going to kill you. You better kill them all." That was Narad Muni. Can you imagine? A sadhu. Well, he had a reason, a higher purpose. Anyway, Sarva Bhavan is teaching us about relationships. Why? I see his class is packed. Because it's important to all of us. We need affection. We need to love and we need to be loved. Ultimately, we want to love Krishna. There's no substitute for that. There's no substitute for Krishna's love. Divine love is the sweetest love, the best love, the most fulfilling love. It's the only thing that will satisfy us, divine love. Krishna is actually the only husband, the only wife, the only master, the only friend. He's the only one who can satisfy us. So, how to be effective in our practice in relationships. There's no shortcut. There's no shortcut to developing good relationships. You just can't parachute into the landscape of a mature relationship. No instant, quick fix in a relationship. It's something that has to be approached with intelligence, with compassion, with maturity, with integrity. Only a strong person. So often we hear the temple president or somebody comes and says that, "Can my disciple marry your disciple?" He really has to get married now. You ever heard that? It's urgent. That's not a relationship. That's not a relationship. Strategic relationships for political reasons in India. You see it happens all the time. Relationships are something much, much deeper. They're not based upon taking, they're based upon giving. Love of Krishna is based upon giving, giving everything, samarpana, surrendering everything. You get everything in return, but you don't think like that. Just like if you go to a prostitute and Prostitutsky, she tells you that I love you. I love you. I love you. But the whole time she's thinking, where is this money? Where is this money? Where is this money? It's just business. Some people approach God like that. Hey Bhagwan.
Hey Bhagwan.
I love you. Ah, you see, people go before the deity. Oh God. They fall flat on the floor and cry. To see it in Bengal. Yeah, right? Prakrita Sahajya. But the whole time they're thinking, my wife is pregnant, I want a son. I'm about to get a raise in pay, please help me God. They've got so big an agenda. That's not a relationship, that's a business deal. You can't, it's not something instant. It requires maturity and integrity. The terrain is covered with the fragments of broken relationships of devotees who tried to parachute in. doesn't work. You have to have private victory. This is really, really important. This is heavy stuff here that we're talking about. If you want to be successful in any department of your life, whether it's business or family or the public arena, anything, you have to develop control of your senses. You have to become a master of your senses and a servant of everyone else. There's really practical utility in this servant of the servant idea. In a community where everyone thinks that they're the servant, everybody experiences great happiness, and everybody experiences that everybody wants to serve them. A master wants people to serve him. But when he doesn't deserve to be served, when he's never served someone else, you can't be a leader until you're a good follower. We have to control the senses by chanting, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
By following the process that Prabhupada is giving us, we can become a master of our senses. They've tried to jump into effective relationships without the maturity and the strength of character to maintain them. Maintenance, it's in the mode of goodness. The best people I have ever met, I just was with one of my god brothers in Spanish Fork in Utah. His name is Charu Das, wonderful devotee, beautiful man. He's doing just tremendous preaching. He's all alone with his wife, Bhai Bobby, Baby Dasi. Very wonderful people. He's 51, 52. Tremendous person. He's excellent in all departments of his life, physical, mental, spiritual, social. I went jogging with him. He left me in the dust. He jogs 9-10 times a week. Amazing guy. He runs in marathons and he comes in first all the time in his age category. He's developed a whole preaching in the state of Utah. He has a whole committee there. He's building a big temple. It's just him and his wife. He's developed it all with the congregation. Wonderful man. He and his wife, I've noticed, they've been together for over 25 years. He's a very mature person. And I've noticed so many other relationships with my god brothers who have lived together peacefully in a Krishna conscious way with their wives for a long period of time. And I've noticed in every situation the people are just very good people in every department of your life. You can't do good in one department of your life and do wrong in another department. It doesn't work. Life is one whole, indivisible whole. You have different departments and you have to act with integrity and maturity in each and every department. Strength of character to maintain the relationship. You can't talk your way out of a situation which you've acted your way into. Oftentimes, as senior members of ISKCON, we're asked to get involved in conflict resolution. Two devotees or two groups of devotees are having some argument, some fight, and they want us to come in and resolve the conflict. And the devotees want to have a half-hour talk and, you know, hope that everything will be okay. But the problem is that the bad feelings have developed over a long period of time. Many situations where they've insulted each other or offended each other or done things which were not proper. You can't talk your way out of those kind of problems. It takes time and patience. Private victory precedes public victory. Self-mastery and self-discipline are the foundation of good relationships with others. So if we want a better world, then these principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat-eating, no gambling, chanting 16 rounds, rising early for Mangalarti, they're the foundation of a better world. A simple life and high thinking, instead of high living and no thinking. You can't live like an animal in the jungle and expect everything to be peaceful. It just doesn't work. Animals like act like animals. Two dogs pass immediately. Woof, 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 woof. Immediately they bark at each other. You're not surprised. They're animals. If we want to live in the jungle like animals, just going on our instinct, right? Then that's what we'll get. We have to control our senses and our mind for a better world. We'll be happier. Between us all, there's what, this is a metaphor that is used called an emotional bank account. In a relationship, there's an emotional bank account. A financial bank account, you all know. How many of you have a bank account? Secretly, how many of you have bank accounts? How many of you have Swiss bank accounts? Nobody's watching, so I'm telling you. You're on video, though. Okay. It's, you make deposits and withdraw from the reserve. That's a bank account. You put money in, and when you need it, you draw it out and spend it. And as long as you have money in the bank, then you can write checks, and the bank will respect you. An emotional bank account. What is that? It's an account, a bank account, an emotional bank account. What is it? It's the symbol of the amount of trust built up in a relationship. An emotional bank account is a symbol, a metaphor for the amount of trust that two people have between each other. And there are deposits and withdrawals that create trust or break trust. You can't expect to have a good relationship with another person if you're completely overdrawn in your bank account, if you've lied to them, if you've cheated them, if you've hurt them, you've done so many things, and your bank account is in bad shape. When there's a difficult problem between you, immediately there's lack of trust, there's dissension, there's backbiting, politicking. What are some emotional deposits in that bank account? Trying to understand a person. Really trying to know them from their frame of reference. Letting them know, just like, what's the biggest problem? What has been the very biggest problem between Palestine and Israel? Who can say, what's been the most hot, contentious issue? There's so many issues, but what's the number one issue between Palestine and Israel? Who can say?
Territory?
No.
Religion?
Religion? No. Economy? No. Understanding? No.
Trust?
No. Israel wants Palestine to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. That's the number one thing. And similarly, Palestine wants Israel to acknowledge Palestine's right to just exist. People need validation in a relationship. They don't need necessarily for you to agree with everything that they think and do, but they want you to recognize their right to be who they are. They want a little understanding. So important. If you're not mature enough, if you don't have enough faith to know that Krishna is the controller, and you're a little bit, you know, loose, not so uptight and, you know, just if they don't conform to your way of thinking, it's my way or the highway, right? My way or get out on the highway and go. My way or the highway. No, you have to give people a little room. Another deposit is little kindnesses. Let me tell you something. This is not new agey, touchy, feely consciousness that I'm introducing. You know, all this relationship stuff, that's just for the women, you know. They're all into relationships, but we men, we know what life is about. Right? Yeah. Macho. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You know him? The Sringa Guru. People were so afraid of him, they would walk on the other side of the road when they saw him coming. They didn't want to get into an argument with him because he was so powerful in debate. You'd make them look like idiots in a moment. He had a policy in the mutt. Sometimes you say moth, but it's mutt. Anyway, mutt. He had a policy in the mutt that each brahmachari should render five services to some other Vaishnava every day. Bring someone a little prasadam. You know, give someone some sweets. You're doing your laundry, offer to do someone else's laundry. Five times a day, find five different Vaishnavas, do a little service. Anything. Every day. Little kindnesses. Makes life so much, the quality of life so much better. You can get by without it. You can get by without it. But then, everything is just so pent up and, you know, there's a big barrier and you can get by. You know, you can maybe become successful temporarily, but in the long run, the last thing that Prabhupada said was, get together, work together, cooperate. Little kindnesses. Keeping promises. Believe me. The worst thing you can do is make a promise and then not keep it. I also do some seminars on other spiritual topics like this one, being a businessman, quality customer care. We take very poor care of guests who come to our temples. If you ever go to a Mormon temple, you'll find people fall all over you to treat you nicely. You never get neglected. They have a rule. Anybody who's a Mormon, as soon as he retires or he's over about 55, he has to spend 2 or 3 days a week at the Mormon temple as a host or a hostess, showing people around. And they have dozens and dozens of retired people at the temples, just greeting people, taking them around, introducing their bogus philosophy. And they don't have any philosophy, but they sure are good at hospitality, and it really makes a difference. And that's one of the reasons why they're the fastest growing religion in the world today. They have no philosophy. They have nothing to teach, but they're just nice to people. People can see that, oh, your religion makes you a very nice person. I don't care what your philosophy is, it must be good. We've got to learn that. So one of the things we always teach people is under-promise and over-deliver. Instead of over-promise and under-deliver. Make so many promises. We had this really neat experience in India. It's called Life Enemies Program. Have you ever had any life enemies visit your temple lately from India? Expecting to be greeted at the airport by the Prime Minister and have live in a super guest house at your temple? Initially we called them life members and we promised them so many things to get their money. And then when they didn't get it, they became our life enemies. Better to under-promise Don't tell them they'll get this, 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 and this. Tell them they'll get devotional service. Tell them it's their duty. Tell them we'll try to do other things. But don't overpromise, underpromise. And then overdeliver. And they'll be so surprised and happy and pleased. Clarifying expectations. One of the biggest problems in relationships, we get together to do something. It doesn't happen. Prabhu, you were supposed to hire the people to do the cooking at the camp. No, I thought you were supposed to do it. No, don't you remember I told you? No. I think it was Dr. Bill. He was supposed to. I can't remember. I thought that unclear expectations in a relationship, in some work we're doing together, take the time to make very clear who you are and what you expect in a relationship or in a something you're doing with people. Unclear expectations are the cause of so much fighting, bickering, politicking. A life of personal integrity. What did the philosopher say? He said, what you are speaks so loudly that I can't hear what you're saying. You don't need to tell people what you are. They can see by what you do, and that speaks so loudly. So live a life of personal integrity. Your character, your strength of character, your private victory, your control of your senses, your fulfilling promises, your faith in principles, you're a principle-centered person. That says volumes and volumes to people. You'll have no dearth of friends and people ready to sacrifice for you whenever you need help. Live a life of personal integrity. It's so much better than being a cheater or a thief or someone who thinks he's getting away with something. You don't get away with anything. You always pay for it in the long run. This is a big one. This is a very, very big one. You know what leaders are? Leaders are people who are not afraid to apologize when they make mistakes. Sincerely apologize. You can't do it artificially. No one's perfect in this world. No one expects you to be perfect. But people do expect you to be honest. People want leaders who are honest, and when they make a mistake, they can say, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you like that in front of your friends. Sometimes a father may say to his son. A husband may tell his wife, I'm sorry I forgot your anniversary. Won't happen again. Of course, that kind of apology may not work, but better to keep a diary and keep it written down. But really, apologizing is such a big thing. It takes a big heart to be able to apologize. And people feel so good when a leader makes a mistake and then apologizes and tries to correct himself. They get right behind such a person like that. They'll vote for him in the next election. What are withdrawals in that bank account? A habit pattern of discourtesy. You ignore people. You let them down. You get in their way. You're just discourteous, basically. And continuously. It's a great withdrawal from the bank account. Disrespect or ignoring. They did a survey of companies. Why do people leave one company and start buying from another company? Why do people leave company A? Why do people stop buying from company A? 3% of the people stop buying for a legitimate reason. They die. 5% developed a friendship. They stopped buying Pepsi and started buying Coca-Cola because they had some friend in the factory. 9% of the people, they didn't like the product. So they started buying from the other company. 16% of the people had some other reason, I forget. But a full 69% of the people stopped buying from company A and started buying from company B because somebody in company A was disrespectful or rude or ignored them. So statistics. They've done so much survey. It's very clear. People don't like to be ignored or disrespected. And in a relationship, that's a withdrawal. Relationships are the important, most important management principle. You can't manage or lead anything unless you have the confidence of other devotees. So you have to be respectful towards them and give them time. It's the greatest time management principle. Spend time on relationships. Violating an expectation. Cutting him off, overreacting. How often do we talk to people and we don't let them talk? We just cut them off at every opportunity, trying to get in our autobiography. Just playing our home movie over and over again. We never listen. Playing little tin god in his life. You know, just telling people where it's at. You know exactly what's best for them. You're a little tin god, interfering, controlling, like a mother-in-law. You know what I mean? I don't know what you mean, but I'm married. I just heard it from friends. Low trust level. Tension City, Memo Haven, you know, in a big office sometimes. We've got some problems in this country, but I'll tell you, out there in the material world, they've got a lot more problems than they have. Big corporations, sometimes they get into such a situation that the employees literally don't talk to each other. They're just bad vibes. It's built up over misinformation or disinformation, lack of communication. The leader is a very poor communicator, staff, the management, and the workers. There's tension. And literally, they don't talk to each other. They just send office memos. They don't want to face each other personally. It becomes so bad. Very often, the company breaks up. There's most, about 90% of the major corporations in the world last a maximum of 30 or 40 years before they break up. Don't last long. So, what is one major emotional withdrawal? Life of personal duplicity. Kutinata. Kutinata. Duplicious behavior. You don't succeed. Don't be duplicious. It's not in your self-interest. You won't succeed by it. You think, and we do things because we want to succeed. We've got a strategy. We've got it figured out. But duplicity will not succeed in any kind of a community, especially a devotional community. Krishna is there watching. It's an apparatus to be duplicious. Better to be simple, straightforward, honest. Even if you're not that, you know, even if that doesn't get you ahead, even if you don't get all the rewards and all the recognition and everything you'd like to have, you'll get everything when Krishna wants you to get it. But don't live a duplicitous life. Live a life of integrity. Be loyal to those who are not in your presence. What is it What is the qualification? What is the propensity that when one is free from it, he can become a spiritual master and make disciples all over the world?
Od koje osoba kada se slobodi može postati duhovni učitelj i biti
propensity to criticize others. It's there in the Upadeshamrita. One is free from the propensity to criticize others unnecessarily. So be loyal to someone who's not in your presence. Don't badmouth people who are, you know, we just love to do it. We all do it. I do it. I must admit, I try not to do it. I'm improving. But we all do it. We talk about others. Sometimes criticizing them to another person, badmouthing them, a leader, a temple president, a GBC, or even just someone in the family. And we're talking to someone else, and it's almost a way of impressing that person. You know, I'm going to make you privy to some special information here. Did you hear about so-and-so, what he's doing? You know, bad-mouthing him, telling all the bad things about him. And you think, he's really becoming my friend. I'm giving him all this neat, dirty information. But what happens? What happens when you do that? Well, you don't create great deposits with those who are in your presence, that's for sure. When I badmouth someone who's not with us, then that person knows that when I have a falling out with him, what am I going to be doing? I'm going to be talking bad about him. Because he knows I did it about that other person. So when we have an argument, I'm just going to be talking to him about him. So if you're loyal to people who are not in your presence, then ultimately people will be impressed with your integrity and they'll develop attraction and affection for you. And you'll feel so much better. If someone says something bad about another person, then say, you may be right. Let's call him over. Let's call him over and see what he has to say about that. You know what will happen? All three of you will develop a better relationship. That's one thing that could happen. Or the other thing that could happen is that person will stop talking about other people in your presence. Because he knows every time you're just going to call them over. I didn't want you to call them over. I just wanted to say some bad things about them. It's not worth it. Major emotional deposit. Ability to apologize. Pride, the opposite, is the huge withdrawal. So this is the fourth habit. It's called think, win, win. It's an interesting term. We're all scripted in a different way. In the material, just like when you do a drama, they give you a script and you read the script and you play it, you act out the script. Well, we're scripted in a win-lose mentality. I win because you lose. But that's not an effective person. In relationships and businesses, effectiveness is largely achieved through cooperative efforts of two or more people. Marriages and other partnerships are interdependent realities. And yet people often approach these relationships with an independent mentality, which is like trying to play golf with a tennis racket. Have you ever tried to play golf with a tennis racket? No? It doesn't work. It's the wrong tool. It's not suited for that sport. Most of us learn to base our self-worth on comparisons and competition. We compare ourselves to others. We do this, I see devotees do this all the time. We reward people who do the most, who get quantity. We don't reward quality. And it's a problem in our society, and I think it's time we did something about it. I think we should have a reward every year for someone who not only distributes books, but distributes books and follows up and makes people devotees. They may not be the biggest in quantity, but they have quality. I think we ought to have a reward for the person who washes the temple floors the best. I think we ought to have a reward for someone who cleans the toilets better than anyone else. Someone who's into quality of every kind of service, becoming the best. No competition with others, competition to do your best, the best you possibly can.
Oops.
I didn't finish that.
Okay.
We think about succeeding in terms of someone else failing. We're scripted, and from our childhood, everything we do is like that. If I win, you lose. Or if you win, I lose. Life is a zero-sum game. There's only so much pie, and if you get a big piece, there's less for me. People with this type of scarcity mentality find it difficult to share recognition and power and to be happy for the successes of others, especially those closest to them. Why should we be so uptight? We should all share in the glory. Prabhupada said, do things together. Then if you succeed, everybody gets the credit. And if you fail, then no one person can be blamed. Good psychology. We should work together as a team, as a family of devotees. And we share the credit for everything. We owe everything to Krishna and to other Vaishnavas. In school, we're brought up, you know, the grading system. You either pass or you fail. Some people pass and some people fail. Not that, oh, this student has done the best according to his capacity, he's good, and this student has done the best according to his capacity, and he may have, you know, done very good work, but he's done the best according to his capacity. And this student, he may have not done so excellent work, but he's done the best according to his capacity. We don't think that way. We're trained. He passes and he fails. He's brilliant and he's stupid. He wins and he loses. That's our training. In sports, it's the same thing. One team wins, the other team loses. One team gets the Stanley Cup, one wins the European Cup, and all the other teams are useless. I've seen there have been countries where their team went to the game, to the international competition. They didn't win, and they came home, and the fans threw eggs at them, and you know, booed them and just really gave them a bad time. We're scripted into win-lose. I win, you lose. It doesn't make for long-lasting, successful teams. It doesn't make for a good society. Paradigms of interaction. Win-win. That's the best. Win-lose. That's what we do most. Lose-win. The lose-win, he's the good guy, right? He's so nice. He lets everybody trample all over him. Let him win, you know. He never does anything in his life. And he lets people walk all over him. And he's never really happy. But he's a good guy. He's a sucker. He's a fool. But, you know, lose, win. Lose, lose. Again, I don't go to movies. And you know, I don't watch videos, but anyway, for householders, if you want to see an example of lose-lose, you can see the War of the Roses. It's from beginning to end, it's all lose-lose between a husband and wife. I mean, it's just, it's incredible what they try and do to each other. They're fighting so much over their house in a divorce case. They're living in the same house together, but they're just trying to get at one another somehow or other. So he accidentally runs his car over her cat, kills her cat. It was an accident, actually. So to get even with him, she kills his dog and one evening serves him up, the dog, for dinner. And he's saying, oh, darling, this is so delicious. How did you make it? He hasn't been able to find his dog recently. So she looks at him and smiles and says, woof, woof. And he freaks out and throws the table and screams. For the whole, you know, length of the movie, they're doing things like this to each other. But basically, it's lose-lose. They're both losing. We do this all the time. You know, when we get upset. Dhyayato vishayan pumsa sangas te shubhajayate sangat sanjayate kama krodo vijayate krodad vavati sammoha. Samohat Shriti Brahmashad, Shriti Vibrama, Shriti Brahmashad Buddhinasho, Buddhinashad Pranashati. Because of contemplation on the objects of senses, we develop lust and attachment. Our intelligence becomes bewildered. We do stupid, foolish things. We wish later on we'd never done them. Then there's win. Then there's the guy who just wants to win. He doesn't really think about you losing. He's, you know, he wants to be the winner. He doesn't care about others. And then there's the ultimate here. Just win-win or no deal. Now, win-win means we try to find a situation where I benefit and you benefit. It's based upon the abundance mentality. There's enough for everybody. There's enough to go around. God is great. There's enough to go around. Let's have a relationship. Let's do a negotiation. There's a lot of negotiations that go on in our lives. In our families, we negotiate, you know, who'll take the car today, you know, who'll stay home with the kids, who'll go to the temple, or who'll cook, or whatever it is. There's all kinds of negotiations that we do. So, let's negotiate taking the other person into consideration. There's enough for everybody. Let's try to negotiate so that we're both happy. If we negotiate win-lose, supposing I lose and you win. Next time I don't want to do business with you. I don't want to negotiate with you. Because I know you're just going to treat me like a thing and try to conquer me, defeat me. It doesn't make for good relationships. Good relationships are based upon mutual respect and integrity. But the reality of win-win is that we may not always be able to find that perfect balance. So, win-win or no deal, it's not that I let you walk all over me. I may have a bottom line, and we can deal even with non-devotees in this way. We can be nice to non-devotees where we mutually benefit. We can deal with non-devotees in such a way that they'll be very happy with us. But if it violates one of our principles, then we just agree to disagree agreeably. We agree to disagree agreeably. We won't do business this time. We won't develop this relationship right now. Maybe in the future we'll get together. But not right now, because we can't find that balance. I want to do a deal with you where you're happy. I want to know you're happy and satisfied, but I'm not going to sacrifice what I need to do my service. See? Win-win or no deal.
Stoga pobjeda, pobjeda ili nema pogodbe.
Abundance versus poverty. A Krishna conscious person, he knows that God is unlimited. There's no scarcity. So he can operate in that abundance mentality. The five dimensions of win-win. To enter into a win-win relationship, you have to have strong character. You have to have maturity, abundance mentality, and integrity. You have to be able to give other people importance. And to do that, you have to be mature. You have to value their existence and also desire their good. Win-win is also important in relationships. Dimensions of win-win. Agreement. Desired results, guidelines, resources, accountability, and consequences. When you enter into an agreement with someone, you should specify what the desired results are. What are your guidelines for that agreement? What are the principles, some of the ground rules? In the beginning, when you make an agreement with someone, this may sound very technical and methodical, but if you want to keep your relationship solid, these are things you have to take the time and trouble to do. If you have an agreement with someone, then make sure that both of you know what you expect. Make sure you know what the guidelines are and what resources are available. Clarify these things. How will you account, what's the accountability? How will it get done? Down the road, 3 days from now, 5 days from now, what's the timeline of things getting done? It takes practice to do this. It's a discipline. I'm giving it to you in an hour and a half. It can take weeks to train this whole discipline, and it can take years to develop proficiency at it. But if you want strong foundational relationships, you have to do it. Consequences. What do we expect? The consequences. Training. Now ISKCON is very much into training. Anyone, he may be totally, you know, he may be a very good person, he may have many good qualities, but if he doesn't get proper training, then he may not come to his highest level of competency. Training is very important. And so in management, in fund development, in congregational preaching, in preaching, in book distribution, in so many fields now, we're putting a lot of money and a lot of energy into training so that devotees can become expert. Training is important. And training in relationship building is also important. The fifth habit is seek first to understand, then to be understood. It's a principle of empathic communication. Empathy is not sympathy. Sympathy means, you know, that you completely agree with the person and, you know, you just feel so sorry for them. But there's a difference. This word empathy means that you understand them. You don't necessarily agree with them, but you understand what motivates them, why they are acting and talking the way they are. What is behind it? You recognize their existence and why they are what they are. Seek first to understand them. Then you try to be understood, but first make sure that you understand where they're coming from. The heart, this is Pascal. Famous. Actually, I like the example of Blaise Pascal. There's another thing I use all the time in my preaching. It's called Pascal's Gamble. Have any of you heard of that? Pascal's Gamble? Huh? Probably you heard it from me. Pascal's Gamble. He was a Christian, basically. At that time, there were many philosophers and scientists who were also a little bit religious. So he said, he was a mathematician and a philosopher. And he said, there are four possibilities
četiri mogućnosti.
One is that there is God.
Da je tu Bog, da postoji Bog.
It's true, there is God.
Istina je da postoji
Bog. And if you follow His laws, you benefit.
Njegove zakone, imate dobro.
Two is that there is God.
Da postoji Bog.
And you don't follow His laws.
Njegove zakone.
And you're in hot water.
I vruće ste vodi.
You're in trouble.
U nevolji ste.
There is God and you don't follow His laws, you're going to be punished.
Zakoni biti ćete.
Three.
Treće.
There is no God.
Nema Boga.
But you live a simple, pious life and you're happy.
Pobožan život i sretni ste.
What have you lost?
Što imate izgubiti?
Once a man came into the San Francisco temple in 1967. Prabhupada was there sitting on the Vyasa San, an Indian man. And he came in and he walked around the temple, looked at some of the paintings, came up to Prabhupada. He said, Swamiji, all this dogma, philosophy, Hindu dharma, it's all very nice. He said, but what if you're wrong?
Ali šta ako ste u krivu? Rekao je, što ako ste u krivu?
Prabhupada said, that's all right. It's a very nice way to live, anyway. So even if there is no God, but if you're happy living a principled life, a God-centered life, a simple life, you haven't lost anything. And the fourth possibility is there's no God, and you don't follow any rules. But what do you gain? You die just like everybody else, same time. You have some good times, some bad times, everybody does. Good times, bad times, and you die without any meaning. So of the four possibilities, 75% says you should be a devotee. That's Pascal's gamble. So it's a good proof to offer skeptics and atheists. Play the odds, man. 75% says you should be a theist, a devotee. So this is another statement by Pascal. The heart has its reasons. Which reason logic and argument knows not of. Sometimes we have to try to seek the understanding of the heart. Diagnose, then prescribe. This is seek first to understand, then to be understood. Now, please, excuse me. I'm going to give you an end. Chance to improve your sight. Right? Now, how does that look? Does that improve your sight? Really? I can't understand. Are you sure? He's been using them for 10 years. And he says they're very, very good. You sure it hasn't improved your sight? No. What's the matter with this guy? He's ungrateful. I've given him very nice glasses that he's been using for 10 years, improved his sight, and he's saying, no, it doesn't improve his sight. That's ridiculous. Anyway, thank you. If you go to an optometrist, and he takes off his glasses and says, here, try these. Are you going to have a lot of faith in him? No. First he should diagnose, do some experiments on your eyes. Then he can prescribe what is the right glasses for you. So seek first to understand the other person. Then try to introduce yourself. You go to a doctor and immediately he hands you three pills and gives you an injection. Doesn't even bother to ask you what the symptoms are. Hey, don't laugh. In India, there's doctors that do that. I'm serious. They give an injection for everything. They charge you 100 rupees. They're very good businessmen. And the mass of people are basically quite simple and foolish. So they buy it. A business deal. Resolving a conflict.
First you've got to get some information. Then you can, you know, make a proper move or a proper diagnosis or whatever. So that's seek first to understand how to do that. Well, when we talk to each other, here's some interesting statistics. When we talk to each other, when we communicate with each other, 38% of it is how we say the words, the sounds we make. Only the words we use are only 7% of communication. There's 7% in importance. The non-verbals, the bodily language, the expressions on our face, say much, much more than the words that come out of our mouth. It's the expressions and the way we say the words and the non-verbal things. But how many of us, when trying to understand another person, look for those things? How many of us just hear the words? Right? How many years did God give you? How many years? 2 years, right?
Years.
He gave you one mouth and 2 ears. What does that mean? You should listen twice as much as you should speak. It's an important message from God. 2 ears. Very often we end up talking twice as much and never listening to the other person. We talk to someone, but we're just secretly waiting till they stop talking so that we can repeat our own autobiography. We just want to jump in and tell them how we feel, what our experience was, the way we see it. And we've already done enough experiments here today, right? Where we see that we all see the world differently. Mostly we're projecting. We don't see the world the way it is. We see the world through our own scripting, our own vision, not the reality. So in trying to get to understand people, there's a need for listening and watching attentively. How many of you learned writing in school? You learned something about writing in school. They taught you how to write in English class or Croatian language, right? How many of you learned about reading? Did you learn about how to read in school? How many learned something about reading? Okay, most of you. Now, how many of you learned about listening? Nobody. Hardly we learn anything in our lives about listening, although it's one of the most important skills that we can ever learn, is how to listen to other people and communicate with them. There's different kinds of listening. There's ignoring. You know, someone's talking to you, they're trying to tell you something, your friend, or your wife, or your children, or another devotee, you're the temple president, and some new doctor's come, and he's trying to tell you something, and you're like, I agree with that, yeah. She's totally ignoring him. Have you ever done that before? Oh, we do that all the time. Pretend to be listening, but we're just ignoring. Pretend listening. You know, your mind's somewhere out there. You're not listening at all. Pretend listening. You don't hear anything. How do you think people feel when they see you doing it? They feel a lot of confidence in you. They want to share. They want to reveal their minds. They want to hear you. They want to develop love. The 6 kinds of loving exchanges. Can't do it with faking. selective listening. We select out something that we want to concentrate on. We don't really hear, but we just, you know, select out little things and then get into our own mind again. We don't really try to get to the bottom of what people are talking to us. Attentive listening. Now, attentive listening is better than the other three, but it's not complete, because we're still attentively listening with the intention to address whatever they're saying with our own experience. Feel, felt, found. I know how you feel. I know exactly how you feel. I also felt that way myself. You know, you give them your own story. But you see the world differently than they do. They don't want to hear your autobiography. They want to have their own feelings validated. They want to know that someone's actually trying to empathically understand them. So the fifth one is called empathic listening. Really listening from their frame of reference. Numbers 1 to 4, you're listening in your own frame of reference, from your own vision of life, your own glasses. You're listening to them, but you're listening from your own frame of reference. Whereas empathic listening is where you're number 5, where you're listening according to the other person. You're actually trying to get out of your own shoes and get around on the other side of the table and try to see it in the way that they're seeing it. You're not agreeing with them. You're not surrendering to them. But you've developed the skill of trying to understand what makes them tick so that you can actually negotiate with them and work out a nice solution. Until you can see the way things they're seeing, you're really not going to get very close in any kind of a relationship. Here are some autobiographical responses that we always use. Advising. Somebody tells you, they try to tell you something, and immediately you try to give them your advice based on your experience. They don't want to hear it, really. But that's our propensity to advise, to probe, you know, to try to go deeper. Now, this is a whole seminar on listening. Roger Bihari Prabhu, the VIG, he studied this. If you ever want to go through a very, very interesting course and an experience, take this empathic listening with Roger Bihari. It's a very deep thing. These are different kinds of biographical, autobiographical responses, interpreting, evaluating. Empathic listening. When we are not sure, we use this empathic listening when we're not, just like you don't use empathic listening when someone asks you, I need to go to the bathroom. You know, you don't need to, well, what does he mean by that? You just tell him where the bathroom is. There's a time and place when you need to use empathic listening. One is when you're not sure whether we understand, when we're not sure the other person feels understood, when the interaction has a strong emotional component, then you need to use some of the skills of empathic listening. Responses. Repeat verbatim what was said. One way to respond is to let people know that you heard, just repeat what they said back to them, so that they know that you heard it. Rephrase the content if you need to. Put it in a little bit different wording, but basically, let them know you're not judging now, but you're just letting them know that you heard what they said. Like sometimes in questions and answers, when someone asks a question and the rest of the audience can't hear it, the speaker will rephrase the question so that everybody knows what the question is, so you can get on with the answer. So in a relationship with others, either collectively or individually, we need to let them know that we've heard what they said. We know where they're coming from. Reflect their feelings in your answer. Rephrase the content and reflect feelings. These are different things you can do. Discern when or when not necessary or appropriate. The sixth habit is called synergy. And the synergy question, can you have synergy without having arrived at a third alternative? Synergy means that life is a complete whole and you can't do things piecemeal. Synergy means that 1 + 1 = 3. I have my way of doing things, you have your way of doing things, and we have a fight, an argument. But an intelligent way of doing things would be to agree to work together, and the combined strength of our doing together will be so much stronger than our doing it individually. It'll be equal to more than 1 + 1 = 2. It'll be equal to 15, it'll be equal to 100 or whatever. Synergy is everywhere in nature. The principle of synergy holds true in social interactions. Synergy is the crowning achievement of all previous habits. It is effectiveness in an interdependent reality. It is a teamwork, team building, the development of unity and creativity with others. Valuing differences is the essence of synergy. It would be a hellish world if everyone were a clone of one person. We should rejoice in the differences between us. Because we are different, we can do things creatively and come up with wonderful solutions. There's no problem with differences when you look at them in a positive way and integrate them for a third alternative, which is so much better. Value the differences in others. The mental, the emotional, the physiological differences between people. And the key to valuing those differences is to realize that we all see the world not as it is, but as we are. Little philosophy there. We project onto the world. What's that verse, that Sanskrit verse? People see the world. Forget it. Anyway, there's a nice verse which says basically the same thing, that everybody sees the world according to their own concept. Atmaman manyate jagat. You see the world as you are. So it's not just something that Stephen Covey invented. These differences are part of the Lord, of Lord Krishna. Krishna has, all differences are resolved in him. When we value the differences, then we can seek the third alternative, one is substantially better than either of the original proposals. This is an example of a country called Mauritius, where it's an amazing country. They have so many different social cultures there. I wish I had a video to show you. It's a beautiful video, but it's not in the right color system. I had a number of videos, but unfortunately we couldn't show them. But this Mauritius is geographically isolated. It's chronic unemployment in the recent past. Third world nation with a rapidly growing population, varied ethnic groups who maintain different religious practices. But that country gets along so well together because they value the differences of everybody. The Prabhupada said it could easily become the first Krishna conscious country. He was very, very happy to go there. People actually go to each other's religious functions and celebrate them. They have different races. They have French, they have Africans, they have Indians, they have all kinds of different ethnic groups, Chinese. But just their whole way of looking at things is kind of principle-centered. It's not, you know, as spiritual as it could be yet, but the devotees are working on that. Sharpen the saw is the last one. We have four dimensions, physical, social, mental, and spiritual. Again, this is not Kaviya's Bhakti Vinod Thakur. In the Jiva Dharma, he talks about different levels of existence. And basically he gives the same four levels of physical, social, mental, and spiritual. And we need to, there were two men, they were having a competition. For 8 hours they were sawing logs. So the idea was who could saw the most logs in 8 hours. So after 8 hours, one man had defeated the other man by a large margin. So it came to the other man's knowledge that that person had actually only sawed logs for 6 hours. He didn't saw logs for 8 hours. He only did it for 6 hours. So the other man freaked out. He said, how did you beat me? I was sawing hard for 8 hours. And you were only sawing for 6 hours. What were you doing during those other 2 hours? The man said, I was sharpening my saw. So this body is the only machine that we have to work with in serving Krishna. And it has a certain performance capability. And our performance is based upon our performance capability, like the goose and the golden eggs. If you don't feed the goose, then you won't get the golden eggs. So we have to take care of our body. Physically, we should have exercise like every day. You should have Sachinandan Maharaj come and lead a 2-hour kirtan. You should dance. Or at least some kind of exercise for half an hour a day. Prabhupada went on a morning walk for 1 hour a day. And he said it added 10 years to his life. Social, emotional, we should work at it. Relationships are based upon action. Mental, we should not allow our brain to atrophy. We should read. Devotees should read. You don't need to read outside books, but you should read Prabhupada's books, and even maybe if you have some technical field, you should read outside books if you're authorized to do that. But keep your mind active. And spiritual may mean many number of different things. Spending time with yourself, going to the mountains, whatever, chanting Hare Krishna, getting, you know, taking a vacation, but doing something that recreates you, that invigorates you. So that's the end of the habits of effective Vaishnavas. The best thing that you can do with this course, it's called third person teaching. Teach it to someone. Go out and teach it to someone. Think of someone right now, tonight in this camp, that in the next week you can teach them a little bit about it. Third person teaching is very powerful. And try to plan to follow some of these things. Get yourself a journal and a diary. Try to develop these habits in your life for effectively preaching Krishna consciousness for the glory of Srila Prabhupada and for the betterment of our society so that we can become a healthy, happy, and holy society. It's a contribution we're trying to make so that devotees can be peaceful and happy, and I know that the ultimate result is that you'll, in a happy environment, you'll be much more inclined to be Krishna conscious. So, if I've created any confusion, please forgive me. I've tried to stay very seriously and thoroughly. This is not... It's not a substitute for Krishna consciousness. So, if anybody has any problems with it, please let me know. I'd be very glad to discuss it with you. And if you'd like to learn something more about it, there are other seminars that you can attend. Now, I know Jai Pataka Maharaj has just come. I have a short video here that I'm going to turn on just because it's night and I've got things set up. It's on our Bombay temple, the project there. It's probably the largest project in ISKCON. It's Prabhupada's office. And you can watch it if you like. It's you know, it's a short thing, but otherwise you can go out and have kids on. Either way, I'll be happy.